Thank you very much to all of you for coming here today, and thank you for our esteemed panelists that are going to join us on the panel for doing business in Japan. This year we decided to mix things up a bit and have a mix of people who are quite seasoned in doing business in Japan and some that are in the process of entering the market in Japan. So I'd like to introduce the panelists. From the left, Jan William Denstad from Seoul Shipping, Moritz Furman from MPC Containers, Shujen Pei from Hafnia, and Gunnar Kuhlen from Graham Car Carriers. Maybe if the panelists can just spend 20 seconds each giving a quick intro on themselves and the company they work for, that would be great. You can start, Jan William.
Okay. Is this on? Yes. So Seoul Shipping, which was established 20 years ago, is doing sale and leaseback transactions on bareboat charter basis. We have done 70 ships since we started, and will continue to do exactly the same, hopefully in many years to come. All type of vessels, I should say.
First of all, great to be here, and thanks to Nicolas and the team of Fernleys organizing, arranging the conference. It's a great event so far. MPC Container Ships is a stock-listed company on the Oslo Stock Exchange with an exclusive focus on the feeder segments and container. We own between 60 and 65 ships, including some new builds that are being delivered anytime soon. We are a fairly long company, and we've been through different market cycles already. And we have been very much focused recently on building a very healthy balance sheet for whatever might come, but also been very focused on renewing the fleet, investing both in eco vessels, but also new builds and retrofit investments on the existing fleet.
Thank you, Nicholas, and it's great to be here as well. So Hafnia is a global leading product and chemical carriers, and we are also dual listed in Oslo and as well as New York just this past April. So I'm here heading up the corporate finance and treasury department. So glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. I represent Graham Car Carriers. We're a pure PCTC tonnage provider. We have 19 ships. Until recently, we were a public company listed in Oslo. Until this July, we were taken over by MSC Group. So we provide tonnage to the major operators in the PCTC segment.
Great, thank you. So in terms of overseas shipping companies or global shipping companies' access to debt, I would say that we're at an all-time high. That is also reflected in shipping companies' access to Asian debt capital, which is at an all-time high. I think the doors in places like Japan, Taiwan, Korea, China are more open than ever to overseas owners and operators, and I've never seen this level of access to capital that we have now for my entire career, or as high as it is now. So this ties in fairly well with the cyclicality that a lot of banks typically have in their approach to the market. We are in a quite long high cycle, and the shipping industry has been a pretty good place to be for most of us over the last few years. So we have a breadth of capital providers that are offering a huge variety of structures, and the volume of capital available at increasingly competitive terms is quite phenomenal. So keeping that in mind, why is it then worth making the effort it takes to establish a presence and open gateways into the Japanese financing sources? Because it does take more work than dealing with your relationship banks in the West. So maybe one for you, Moritz, first. You know, you're in the process of exploring a refinancing with some Japanese lenders, and this would be your first or your company's first Japanese financing. You have a number of Western lenders that already finance you, and you've also tapped the Norwegian bond market recently and previously as well on multiple occasions. So with all the debt products available to you in your sort of financing toolbox, what is your motivation for entering the Japanese market?
For us, there's essentially three main reasons as to why we would like to enter the Japanese market. And first of all, the Japanese maritime cluster is the largest globally. And it's not only the lending side, it's also the yards, the trading houses, the operators. It's a very, very powerful maritime cluster, and anybody in shipping globally should at least try to have access to this market. From an MPCC perspective, beside, you know, K-Line, NYK and OML now operating under ONE, being our customer, lending would be the logical next step for us trying to establish a relationship with the Japanese market. And secondly, as you rightfully mentioned, I mean, we're very well covered by the Western banks. We have great access to the Norwegian capital markets to raise debt. But also history has shown that not too dissimilar to the shipping market, also the lending market has been quite volatile. You see also big lenders going in and out of ship finance, and especially the German market, you have seen a lot of banks exiting the lending space. I wouldn't say capital is constrained, but you have clearly seen a lot of banks leaving the space. So from that perspective, and for a company like MPCC, it's just a prudent move to broaden the horizon and expand also into markets that not only have a long-term view on shipping, but they also have a profound understanding of the shipping market, then again referencing the maritime cluster. And thirdly, and that's also quite compelling for us, obviously, is the terms are quite competitive from the Japanese market, and especially in view of the increasing regulation in the European lending space, namely Basel IV, I believe that the Japanese lending space will be even more competitive going forward. So that's obviously also quite interesting for us.
Thank you. One key differentiator from dealing with Western banks is process. I think that the credit evaluation of a lot of the Japanese lenders and lessors often includes more qualitative variables and put more focus and emphasis on that probably than Western banks, who often take on a more sort of pure credit analysis approach. And for that reason, I think the timelines often take a bit longer, at least in the first one or two transactions. So, Shujen, one for you. Of all the participants at this conference, at least from the names I've seen on the list, I think you know you are probably one of the most overbanked shipping companies. You have a pool of all the biggest and best names in the financing industry. And, you know, I think that that means that with the experience that that your team has in raising debt capital, how would you describe your experience, and you see areas of improvement which could ensure that the Japanese lenders and lessors get a place high up on your calling list when you at some point do want or need more debt? So what can they be doing differently and better in order to attract customers such as Hafnia?
Yeah, thanks for that. So Hafnia has been working with Japanese partners since 2015. So we have a long-standing relationship, and we've been also quite grateful for the support. But I guess you are right in saying that there are a few hurdles before achieving a smooth cooperation. So I think even though I'm out of the dating scene for a while, but if you see from a long-term relationship angle, I think it takes time to know each other. Credit approval process does take longer than expected, but it's also more about communications and transparency. And like I said, once we are comfortable with each other, I think things progress much smoothly from there. I think for us, one struggle we do have is that, for example, if there's any amendments in loan documentations, for example, it does take quite a fair bit of time compared to the rest of the other financiers. So hopefully that could be improved, because sometimes it's just a small amendment, especially on the operational side. But I understand they do need to still go up through the chain of approval. So hopefully that will be smoother going forward. I think for us, what's interesting is we are well-banked, so we do enjoy competitive pricing. But what is interesting for us is the financial flexibility. So that's one important consideration. And also from a tax point of view, if you could book your loans in Singapore, that's also very interesting for us as well. I think one other thing is when we are so focused on cash flow break-even, I think longer amortization profile is definitely a plus as well. So I think that's, the main advantages that we could see in the Japanese market.
Thank you.
Yes.
So I suspect that the willingness of the regional banks to lend to overseas shipping companies is inversely correlated with the relative decline of Japanese yard output and domestic shipping company expansion in Japan. So as you've seen, massive growth in yard capacity in China over the last two decades. It declines after the financial crisis, but in relative terms, you know, Japan has not been growing at the same pace as other shipbuilding nations. And therefore, we've also seen that the growth volume of domestic Japanese shipping business has not followed the same pace as the global market. So we think that relative decline is inversely correlated with the regional banks interest in lending to overseas clients. In other words, there are less new business opportunities for Japanese lenders domestically, and therefore they seem to be looking outside of Japan. Gunnar, your company is in a sector with a very strong Japanese presence, you know, both on the operator side. Historically, I think Japanese yards have also been quite proficient in building PCTCs. So with the existence of many Japanese local owners acting as tonnage providers to the Japanese operators, would you say from your experience that when financing PCTCs in Japan, that financing vessel type which the Japanese lenders are familiar with, you know, car carriers being a fairly established business in Japan, is that a key success factor or not that important?
I mean, I can't speak so much for other vessels type, but for car carriers, I mean, a bit more background. Car carriers, we've been doing business on the chartering side for a long time. I think going back long before my time, back to the 1980s. And these relationships really matter. But on the more specific vessel type, I mean, the Japanese have a long shipbuilding industry. They have a car industry, long history in exporting cars, and like you alluded to, the local owners. So there is a lot of knowledge here on the PCTC market, car carriers, which sometimes I think we do not find so much elsewhere. Well, maybe we have to educate lenders a bit on the PCTC segment, because the PCTC market is a very niche market. So for us, I think the process of borrowing money in Japan is facilitated by their knowledge to the segment. I mean, the industry and the vessel type. The PCTC vessels, they are quite different animals from other vessel types, in that they have a longer useful life, which is something we sometimes struggle with a bit to educate lenders on. But historically, a PCTC would have a useful life up to 30 years, which is an important factor looking at profiles of loans. So for us, I think the knowledge of the PCT market really facilitates, makes it easier for us to approach the Japanese financing market.
Thank you. Then from a pure single sector ship owner over to someone who has a slightly different business model, Jan William, Sole Shipping is not a traditional ship owner operator as most of the other companies on these panels today, and as such is maybe the odd one out in this group. You own a diversified portfolio of vessel types. You provide lease financing to a broad range of ship owners, and you're exclusively funded with institutional capital on the equity side. So one key success factor for your business model is cost of capital arbitrage. It's not the only one, but it's an important one. How does the Japanese market fit into Sole Shipping strategy?
Thank you. Obviously, to be competitive on cost of capital is a key factor. And as such, the Japanese market could be there to help us in become even more competitive. That's why we are here, to try to explore this market, which I agree with you is probably one of the most professional markets these days. But I have to say that if I look back over the 20 years, we have done 70 vessels in the sale-leaseback transactions. And I know for a fact that many of these deals, the cost of capital for our counterparties were higher using our structure rather than competitors. And I think that we were still able to win those mandates because we share with the counterparties a belief in long-term relationships and also knowledge. I think what the counterparties have seen in us is a possibility for a long-term relationship. It's not correct that we are exclusively funded with institutional capital. We actually invest quite a bit of our own money as partners, which means that we are here today, but we are also there in 10 years' time because we are tied to the mast and it's our business. And we also have a large group of Norwegian ship owners and family offices in Norway with long history in shipping. So I think that also brings knowledge into Sole Shipping, which could be important on a rainy day into the future, that there is a belief that we understand the shipping industry and it's not just a spreadsheet ship owner. And we also have one ex-captain and one ex-chief engineer doing physical inspections of the vessels, which the ship owners that is our counterparties love to read because they can use that as a tool towards their own in-house management. I think, and furthermore, we are very private, so we don't tell the market when we do transactions. We keep it confidential. And the final one is speed of execution. We can turn around very quickly. I think in 2 weeks' time is the record we have. But also to Xu Shen's comment, we did actually a deal together with Hafnia before BW came in. And I think the focus of your group at that time was to have low bareboat rates in order to have low break-even rates and show a better EBITDA being a stock-listed company. And we have then the ability to be flexible on that. So the way we solved that and actually won the mandate was that we arranged with one of our house banks a second priority mortgage wraparound facility. So we actually had a second mortgage which we drew down in 16 installments each quarter and used that to subsidize the repayment of the first mortgage loans, which enabled us to keep the bareboat rates actually even lower than the Japanese market could do at that time. So cost of capital was probably more expensive, but the main target was to have the low break-even rates, and that's something that we could achieve by being flexible in structuring the deal.
Excellent, thank you. So for those who are high up on large Western lenders' calling list, RCFs are increasingly being offered by that type of bank. Flexibility is very important today for most large ship owners. I think most people would agree that asset values are pretty high today, but everyone knows that this is a cyclical industry. At some point, there will be new opportunities. And then from a borrower's or ship owner's perspective, an RCF is a perfect tool. And certainly that flexibility is more important than high leverage these days. So, Shujian, Hafnia's recently secured such RCFs. I think you did one last year at very compelling terms. Can you tell us a bit about the attractiveness for Hafnia of using RCFs instead of term loans?
Yeah, sure. I think since last year, we have actually been on a deleveraging journey. So we have fully repaid our RCFs and even do some early repayment of the term loan as well. So what we wanted to do for the RCF is to have readily available credit lines that's committed. But at the same time, you know, with a lack of huge investment and CAPEX program, the use of proceeds, if that's not clearly defined, it's very difficult to explain to both our internal and external shareholders on why is there so much cash on balance sheet. So maybe return more to the shareholders. I think that will definitely be a comment that will be made by the investors. So for us, what we find is that this RCF serves our purpose. So having it, leaving it undrawn to when it's when we have an investment program, and also having and also keeping through that, keeping the cash flow break even low as well. So paying commitment fees, but not, you know, paying the full principal and interest expense, I think at this stage of the cycle help make our cash flow break even very competitive in the industry as well. So I think that's really, for us, that's really the beauty of the RCFs.
It's fair to say that it's high up on your wish list going forward.
Very high up.
Okay. Lack of use of proceeds. We're just talking about high asset values. So in the near term, the high asset values has been an impediment for many of our clients, at least, to accept competitively priced capital when we put it in front of them. With full order books at yards for the next 3 to 4 years and fleet renewal still being necessary for many segments going forward in years to come, we think the demand for debt capital is likely to increase massively going forward as you see fleet renewal start also for tankers and dry cargo, which inevitably will come at some point. Container vessels is one segment where fleet renewal is very much on the way already and has been happening for a couple of years already. And the order book is sizable. Certain liners don't seem to stop ordering. I feel like I read new articles every week about certain liners placing huge orders. So one for you, Moritz. As a leading tonnage provider to the liners, you're likely going to see many growth opportunities on the back of some of these newbuilding orders that have been placed. The liners don't necessarily want to own all this tonnage themselves, so inevitably you'll probably end up with companies like yourselves. How do you see Japanese banks and lessors fitting into this equation? And what would be your key criteria when approaching them to seek funding for MPC's growth?
Before speaking or talking about the specific requirements, I think it makes sense to take a step back and look at the order book itself. Because yes, the order book, we're talking about north of 20% of the current fleet being placed at yards, but the order book itself in containers is heavily skewed towards the larger sizes. So between 80 and 90% is 8,000 plus TEU. So it's not really the MPCC focus. And most of the ordering spree has been driven by the liner companies, as Nicholas has mentioned. Either the liner companies keep the vessels on their own balance sheet, or they will tender the vessels out. And that means for the large vessels, they are looking for 10 to 15 year time charters. If you have those long durations, it's immediately a cost of capital game that we are not willing to play. And there's other people that price those transactions at 5-6% return. And that's not our return aspiration. So on from that perspective, we're probably struggling to play a meaningful role in the large order book that we see. But interestingly, if you look at the feeder segment, which is the segment that we're operating in, the order book is relatively small. One and two, you also see that the age profile is fairly old. So from our perspective, there is a huge underinvestment in the feeder segment, and that will, in the foreseeable future, certainly lead to an ordering activity, either by liner companies or proactively by companies like MPCC. If you look at the new buildings in the feeder segment, you will rarely see time charter contracts going 10 to 15 years. You would probably see anything between 3 and 5 years, if at all. Some people might order speculative. From our perspective, we would always try to combine with a time charter. So talking about the specific requirements towards the Japanese lending space is, I mean, I've been a banker myself, and I appreciate that banks ideally would like to have a corporate guarantee, the most modern asset, and a 15-year time charter with a full payout profile. That's not going to happen in the feeder space. So the specific requirement from us would be to, from a bank's perspective, to be able to take a view on residual risk, assuming a modern feeder vessel, a corporate guarantee from a strong corporate like MPCC, but only a 3-year time charter and assuming a 5-year tenor. So that means that there's that there will be a loan outstanding at charter expiration, and our strong desire would be from lenders, be it in Japan or elsewhere, to take a view on the residual. Right, because a full payout profile in 3 years' time is just not feasible. Also, not in 5 years' time. So that would be the strong desire from our perspective to take a view on the residual, and then partner up on those projects. Because I think, you know, again, looking at the container space, it could make a lot of sense to partner up on ordering feeder vessels, because it has been so underinvested in the last couple of years.
Thank you. Gunnar, there is a sizable order book for PCTCs as well. When I say as well, relative to the big container ships, not the feeders. And you're also a tonnage provider. So I'd like to hear your views on the same question. You know, what role is Gram going to play in the order book that's there for new buildings? A lot of them have been ordered speculatively. It's not that easy to enter the car carrier market if you don't have a track record. So what will be sort of the key criteria when talking to Japanese lenders and lenders elsewhere about financing your growth going forward?
Maybe say a bit about the order book first. I mean, the car carriers, there's been very little investment over a very long period. Now we have quite a big order book. There's no vessels being scrapped currently, and there is a big deficit on vessels now with what's been happening 2020 after with the Far East exports. Looking back to 2019, the exports from Far East is up more than 50%, which is really what drives the car carrier market. Everything on the backhaul, there's plenty capacity. That doesn't really matter. But the exports from Far East is what really drives the demand. And this capacity, especially out of China now, there's a lot of vehicles leaving, not on ro-ro vessels. So we believe that this market will absorb a lot of the new builds. And there will also be more capacity needed for replacement. The new emission regulations are going to be mean that some vessels are going to be less competitive, and they're also going to have to slow down to some extent. So that's on the order book. In terms of Gram's role in the order book, I mean, when we were a listed company, we were about providing dividend yield. So new builds didn't really fit into our story. And I think our strategy is still, we're relatively fresh in under our new ownership, but I think to buy new builds on speculative is a little bit of not typically our strategy. So we like to have some cash flow attached to the assets. And in terms of many questions in one. In terms of the role of the Japanese, I think Moritz and Sushan covered it. But to have a diversified banking group is important because things change. And on the wish list, I think we have also covered it very well with the amortization schedules and. But we are in a high market now, so we believe in having a healthy cash break even. Healthy LTVs and keeping our cash break even at a healthy level, I think is important, because at some point, the market will normalize at some point with the new builds being delivered. I think we have to be realistic about that.
Yeah. So we've touched upon process and credit evaluation a bit earlier, and how the experience has been from the borrower side when dealing with Japanese lenders, and differences from what is typically encountered when dealing with Western lenders. Now that we're high up in the cycle and many capital sources are competing for new business, how can one stay competitive without taking on too much risk? Now, that would typically be a question for a bank or a lender, but I'd like to ask Jan William, since you are an ex-lending banker and now a financier of sorts to the shipping industry, you must have been through a number of cycles in your career and are by now a seasoned evaluator of credits, whether it's in qualitative or quantitative terms. Would you mind sharing your perspectives on how to avoid stepping into minefield when lending at this point in the cycle?
That's a very good question. But sometimes, if you look back, the best deal is the one that you didn't do. And sometimes it's smart to sit on your hands and to avoid stepping into very high markets. But irrespective of that, our philosophy since we started the business is, first of all, to find good counterparties. And by that, corporate structures, which has a purpose with the fleet that they have. There is a system value in addition to the value of the vessels. We like to see an industrial approach where they have direct, good, long-standing relationship with end users that keep the ships employed. One thing is the market, but at least keep them employed. That's a crucial factor. And we also like to, stress test the fleet by doing three-year forecasts of cash flow, profit and loss and balance sheet under stress scenario assumptions, where the markets are really coming down, to see if they have sufficient liquidity to withstand a drop in the market, and also testing their financial covenants that they have with their banks. So if they go in breach with covenants, then hell can break loose. But also, very importantly, this is a people's business. So we like to see who is the owner, the board of directors, and the management, that they have a good long-term track record and capable of handling a stress test scenario, and that they are behaving professionally. So that's one side to it. The other side is, of course, to look at the ship itself. We always have what we call a seller's credit involved, which means that we reduce the leverage from 100% to maybe 40 to 60 or 80%. And we like to have a net purchase price, which is decent compared to historical values. We like to see that the time charter break-even rate based on the capital expenditure and OPEX is also in line with historical rates, or that they can survive without the high rates that we have today. And in any case, we always also have a lot of focus on what we call structure risk in the loan agreements. So, for instance, Western banks, at least, they like to have a minimum value clause on the ships, which we have negotiated out. We may pay a little bit higher margin, but as long as our counterparties are in compliance, they have financial covenants. As long as they're in compliance, there is no minimum value test to be done. And we saw that, for instance, in 2008, when the Lehman crisis happened. We had some older Panamax bulkers, which struck really hard in value. And the banks were, calling in capital from our competitors. But since we didn't have any minimum value clause, we were not in breach of anything, so we were actually allowed to pay dividends instead. So that's to have a focus on covenants is also a key, I think. But find the right counterparty, and if you have to do the top dollar in high market, don't do it. I think that's the easy question, or an easy answer to that question.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's a big and broad question. One quick final question for me in the last 2 minutes we have left. I think everyone can agree that the market has felt a little bit toppy, whether you look at asset values or freight rates, new building prices, certainly. It kind of feels like we're at the peak or maybe even slightly over it. So if we sit here 24 months from now, do you think that the availability of debt capital will be more or less available than it is today? Yes or no from each of you? Jan Willem, start with you.
It depends. I think if the market stays firm, as many believe that it will, I think the banks will continue to be there. If the markets collapse, then I think the banks will disappear faster than they entered.
Moritz?
2 years from now, I would say European capacity is less. Relatively speaking, capital markets is also less, because right now it is as good as it gets, I believe. And Far East, I hope it's more.
Good answer. Shujan?
Actually, to me, it's more. I think overall shipping companies have sort of learned their lessons, and especially on balance sheet management, they have been quite prudent and they have been deleveraging quite a lot. So I would say in that case, looking at from a balance sheet strength perspective, there should be still more capital. And I'm still also fairly optimistic about the market.
You know?
What more to say? I think I say I agree with everyone else, but I think we cannot deny that there is a correlation to the market. I hope it will be more.
And I hope for all our sakes that you're all right. Thank you very much to everyone for listening, and thanks to the panelists for sharing their insights.
Thank you.